Shut up and sit down.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah, Batman.
Our bikes love us and we love them back. As we ride through the city by the cars like black. On the teeth of the town, we just keep on singing. We're unstoppable.
Oh, hell yeah.
You are listening to the Dialed Podcast with Matt Legrand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Deuring. One of the most important decisions you will make is to be in a good mood. For every minute you are angry, you lose 60 seconds of happiness. So, crank it up and be happy, my friend.
When things are good, when things are hard, we ride together, we don't drive cars, but together we make such beautiful music.
Oh, hell yeah, brother, yee yee!
Unstoppable mamas, a G and O. Unstoppable kids, yeah. Get your bike and go. Get your bike and go. Unstoppable
papas.
Pedal and flow.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. You're doing it good, buddy. Great job.
Hi, welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I am Jake Von Deuring, and I'm here with Lance Hepler.
Lance Hepler.
Hey.
This episode sponsored by ice cream sandwiches.
Ice cream sandwiches. Yes, I am here. Here we go. I made the big trek back from Arizona, and I feel like I've made a mistake coming back here.
Hey.
What?
F off. To his right, Sir Ian Gibson. Coach Sir Ian Gibson.
Coach Ian Gibson.
Coach Sir Ian Gibson.
Sir Coach Ian Gibson.
Happy to
Coach
be here.
Sir Ian Gibson. Which one? We got to put the sir in there. That has to live in there.
You really don't have to.
But it makes us feel better.
Okay. I like that, though. It just adds more clout to you. coming to us over FaceTime Verizon Network by way of some Vision.
Apple Vision Pro.
Those things are crazy.
The big goggles.
Mr. Matt LeGrand.
Ski goggles. I'm currently wearing a pair of ski goggles. So if we're ready to hit the slopes, I can do that or podcast with you guys. So
sweet. Matt, why are you on ski goggles today talking to us over the Verizon network? What's going on over there at the LeGrand household?
Because I've actually never done FaceTime over the Apple Vision Pro. And it's like one of the big features is you can show your persona, which is it's basically like a digital avatar. You guys described it as like a Max Headroom kind of look. And so that's, I wanted to test it out. And you guys are the perfect test subjects.
Sweet.
Yeah, when you turn your head to the side, the whole back of your head fades away like you're a robot. Like you're...
That's good, yeah. Because I have very ugly ears and I don't want you guys to see them.
But you have those pretty blue eyes, man.
That's right, he has no ears.
Pretty blue. They're digital imposed eyes. So.
Right on. All right, hey, you guys want to backpedal a little bit? Matt, you want to go first?
Yes, backpedal. I need to go first because my kids are pukey. I got two kids at home, sick from school. And high temperatures are running in this house. I think Lance brought back something from Arizona and shared it with my kids when I wasn't looking.
Possibly yes.
But I rode bikes outside once this week, and we picked one glorious sunny day. It was cold, but it was good. And gave Jake like the 5-minute warning, like, "Hey, let's go bike." So
sure
and
did,
and you actually did it. Rode your bike outside.
If you want to call it that.
Maybe I should let Jake backpedal and talk about this, but like, it was beautiful, and we rode on top of Prune Hill for a very short amount of time, except for that it was horrible in the fact that like, I think I was biking, and I like just went up this slight hill. We were pretty much done with our whatever 15-minute ride, we'll call it, and I drop my chain and Jake's like, "Yeah, we gotta get that thing fixed." Like literally less than 100 meters later, his tire starts spewing white stuff. We'll just say his tire was jizzing all over him all over. Geez. It was like money shot extraordinary. I mean, he was absolutely covered in sealant from the front wheel.
Uh-huh.
And it was basically irreparable, or I mean, I don't know if irreparable is the right thing. But well, we didn't have the right tools. We didn't have a plug. We didn't have a dyno plug. It never sealed.
I'm so out of sorts right now. And you get all your stuff together, but I didn't look through my little bag. And I'm like, I'm just going to go ride for 20 or 30 minutes. Not a big deal.
Yeah,
and of course, you get a big old giant puncture. And I pull out my dyno plugs. I got three different ways to put a dyno plug into this thing. And none of them had a dyno plug in them because I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember I gave one to this person and this person and this person, and I never reloaded. So it kind of started to seal. But then as soon as I started to ride again, it just was a big show, a big spectacle all over again. And when I got home, I was sealed.
By the time you got home, it had actually sealed.
No.
It had not. It
was sealed on the rim, pretty much. And there was no more pressure to push any more sealant out. So it was pretty much out of sealant, out of air, on the wheel.
The bike universe at the moment hates you, Jake.
Fucking hates me.
Jake had, when we finished, Jake had about like a gallon of sealant all over him in the bike. I don't know how much sealant you're putting in your bike, but it's impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Anyway. All right. Thanks, Matt.
Good
that.
Times. Yep.
That was a great story.
Anything else, Mr. LeGrand?
I swam a couple times. I'm testing this power. It's, I would describe it as kind of a power meter for swim. It's pretty cool. So did that a couple times, and I'm still taking a little break from running because of some sort of quad tear thing. And, I've been doing my normal coaching thing. Like I go up to Camas High School and help some kids with their weights. And I always do a little bit of weights and stuff with them, not lifting as much as Jake, but, still getting something in. So
good on you.
Not a lot.
Cool.
And then I got kids that are sick, so I might be able to ride the trainer with the Apple Vision Pro goggles on, or walk on the treadmill or something boring like that. But not a lot going on here.
That's a bummer that your kids are sick. Who got sick first?
I feel like my oldest kid, Ethan, was the first one to kind of start complaining about a sore throat, but then Dash quickly got the worst of it. And then Ethan now seems to be in a pretty bad spot. He has the super high temperature, 104 last night. And then both of them have thrown up a couple of times. So
I was given a directive to ask you who got it first, where did they get it from, and how bad are they throwing up? Because my wife, I might have mentioned this once or twice on the podcast before in the past.
Yeah.
Massive, massive phobia of throwing up. And anytime she hears about it, she starts going into super sleuth mode and starts putting together all the pieces and try to figure out who patient zero is and where it came from so she can avoid it like the plague. So anyway,
it could be at the middle school from my oldest kid. But those between the middle school and the elementary school that are right there, that's patient zero.
Yeah, ground zero right there. Yep. That's where the monkey bit somebody.
That's a factory. Yeah, the monkey. They let monkeys off the bus, and then it's just it's pretty bad. But so who knows where that came from? It's last night at dinner, the dog threw up, and then my youngest kid threw up. All of it was on the floor right by our dining room table. My wife and I were kind of laughing, but we were this would be funny if we weren't cleaning up puke all over the floor.
I'm hoping and guessing you've probably seen the movie Stand By Me, right? Have you ever seen that movie?
Stand By Me.
It was probably back in the late 80s or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I know what you're referring to.
River Phoenix.
I don't remember.
Yeah, all those guys. But yeah. They had that the blueberry pie eating contest.
Yes.
And somebody laced something or something happened. But one person started puking and everybody had been eating blueberry pie. And then everybody started puking. It was a giant puke fest. Got to go watch that if you haven't seen
it. Yeah, that was basically our dinner last night. We didn't make a super nice dinner, but we were all sitting down. And so it was just and this dinner's over.
I'm sorry, man.
I always think of Mr. Creosote from Monty Python's Meaning of Life whenever we hear puking stories.
Get me a bucket.
Yeah.
Right?
Lovely. All right. Ian, you want to do some backpedaling for us?
Sure. So we came back from Tenerife probably a week and a half ago.
Yep.
About that. I've been trying to carry that fitness through because we got training camp coming up. I've been trying to get back into the gym because it's been a few weeks since I was lifting. And I haven't had to go to work, which is great.
Right.
And Yeah, so I've had plenty of time. Been out on the bike quite a bit, trying to maintain my fitness. So yeah, went out to the West Hills and rode up Rocky Point and Logie and Newbury and tried to get some elevation that way. And then Sunday I went and did the Selby shootout run.
Ah, how many people were there?
It was a good turnout. I bet there was 35, 40 guys out there.
Oh, wow. So, fantastic.
Yeah, it's a little intimidating. It's been a long time since I've been out and done that, but always a good crew, and I stayed on, did not get shut out, so that was good.
Hallelujah.
And trying to get coping with the Pacific Northwest weather again, I went out yesterday to do some hill repeats locally in Gresham there, and I made it about 3 miles into the ride and just got drenched. So
it was supposed to be nice yesterday, not much rain, and it wasn't. It rained.
I waited until the weather app said the rain was done, and then I went out and I'm like, yeah, there's maybe a little bit of residual dampness on the roads, and then there was some spitting, and then I did one lap up Walters Avenue out of Gresham, which is about a mile and a half steep, good grade climb. Anyway, by the time I got to the bottom, I was drenched through, so I just came home. And
yeah. That sucks.
F that.
You know how you don't get soaked?
It was not Tenerife, that's for sure.
You know how you don't get soaked?
Still feeling, what's that?
You know how you don't get soaked?
You don't go out.
You don't ride.
You just don't ride your bike.
Or you stay in and do Swift, and I've done plenty of indoor training still, but I got to admit, getting a little burnt out on the indoor training.
'Tis the season for getting burned out. It's about that time of year. Shy of a month away from the time change, so it's almost here, boys.
Come on.
It's almost
here. I could just ride my bike. That would be freaking incredible.
Yes. Anyway, that's what I got to say about that.
Sweet. Lance friggin' Hepler.
Yeah, so when we last talked, I had been in Tucson for most of the week.
Uh-huh.
The last ride I did in Tucson was a ride that we did with Leanda Cave. So she's a former professional triathlete. She's won Kona and the 70.3 World Championship. So, and she's like the only female athlete that I think has won both of those in the same year.
Uh-huh.
So she's a great British athlete. But she lives in Tucson now. And she was having like a group ride, and they call it the Pinarello Collective because she's sponsored by Pinarello.
Still?
Yeah.
Wow. Is she still competing quite a bit at like the master's level or something?
I don't think so, but...
Does she race at all, or is she just somebody like...
Also, I don't know.
Interesting.
But she showed up, and there was like 50 people on the ride. It was going to be about a 60-mile ride out to Colossal Cave in Tucson, if you know where that's at. And it was supposed to be Zone 2 except for one section, and it was very Zone 2 until it wasn't. And then it was full freaking gas for like an hour. So I might have been partially to blame for that. So yeah, with 50 people on the ride, there was a point where I was drilling it at the front with like three other guys, a guy on a tandem, this male supermodel from Brazil, and Gary Allen, my buddy. So just the four of us were on the front rotating, and everybody else was just sitting on our wheels. They wouldn't get in the rotation. And then one little roller and I turned around and nope, everybody gone. It was just the four of us. So whatever. And then the way back was just as fast because there was a tailwind. I think there was an 11-mile segment we averaged over 30 miles an hour for 11 miles.
Wow.
So I had a blast in Tucson. I got some good fitness. I did some great, group rides. My legs are feeling great. It's all doing good. That was Sunday. And then Monday, I drove down to Patagonia, Arizona, which is about an hour south of Tucson. It's near the Mexican border. It is a hotspot for gravel, Patagonia, Arizona. It's where the Spirit World 100 race happens, and that's usually a November race. And Yuri Hosvold, who's a buddy I've talked about, he's a former gravel pro, and he won Unbound in 2015, so he's got some palmares behind him. We've kind of become friends. I texted him because I knew that he was down in Patagonia, and I'm like, hey, if I come down, could we go for a ride? He was like, hell yeah, come down. I'll show you all the goods. So he took me on like a 50-mile ride on these freaking fantastic gravel roads outside of Patagonia. We rode all the way to the Mexican border. I actually touched the fence as Border Patrol drove by. They didn't care about us. And we had a great time. So the weather was perfect for us. It wasn't muddy. It was just fantastic. The gravel and the weather down there was just primo. So I had a great time.
Heather Jackson, do you know who Heather Jackson is? She
sure.
There. She was a triathlete, but now she's gravel and ultra running, I think. But
yeah, and she was in the Lifetime Grand Prix last year. Heather Jackson was. I don't know if she's in it this year.
She's done really
I
don't know, but she's done really well recently in some of the gravel ride stuff. And I think that she lives in Bend, but she likes to train at in Patagonia when she's down that way.
I'm not surprised. It's a tiny little town, you know, like 900 people, but there's bike stuff all over town because it used to be like a mining town. Actually, there's a huge mine causing some issues at the moment down there in Patagonia. There's a mine that is mining elements for our phone batteries and for whatnot. And so it has kind of created some issues down there, but there's so much great gravel roads down there that it's just super fantastic. So I loved it. So after that, I jumped in the van like immediately after the ride, like at noon, and started driving home and spent 2.5 days driving all the way back from Patagonia to Vancouver, Washington. If you hear the sweet, silky, lower sound of my voice, it's because I got sick. I don't know what it was, but I think it's because I went so hard for 6 weeks and then I turned it all off for 2 days to drive. My body like went in repair mode and my immune system must have dipped. But anyway, I've had a cough and a fever and fatigue and achy, and it is now Friday and I have not ridden since Monday. I've taken 3 full days off already, which
karma sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, that's right. I deserve everything that's coming to me, but now I'm just going to be rested for training camp. So watch out, you mother scratcher.
Did we ever get that Slack channel going? The I Hate Lance channel. Is that true? I think it would be popular.
It would be popular if we start the I Hate Lance Instagram page and Slack channel. Yeah,
there you go. Yep. Yeah. And hashtag it and everything. Yep.
Hashtag it.
Sweet. I'm not going to backpedal because y'all know. You already heard everything you need to hear.
Because F that.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, the Patreon. We're going to do a Patreon drawing this weekend. Lance, I'm going to let you do the honors here. I'm supposed to be doing some like Patreon music. I'll just do that in post. So anyway, exactly. So we've got some new goodies that were added to the Patreon bin at the lab, and we can ship them out if necessary. And you can pick something out of there, or you can just say, hey, I want the new cask thing that just came through, which is going to be a hat, a water bottle, and a t-shirt from Cask.
Cool.
So
I like Cask.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Great helmets too. So anyway, Lance is going to pull a name out of the hat. There's a thing in his hand. He's going to
The winner is Christopher Mann.
Chris, yeah, Mann, Chris. Winner, chicken dinner. I think that is a client of yours, isn't
it? Chris is a great client of mine.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's fortunate.
Dedicated, hardworking athlete right there. He's going to do. He's going to crush it this year.
He's gotcha. Super strong. Yeah.
He's come a long way in the last 2 years.
I have
enjoyed watching him ride. And I remember the first couple times he came out to ride with us, he was with us for like the first 10 minutes and then just got popped off the back. And there was a point in time where he finally started keeping up, and then he had a little bit of a spill in a local crit and kind of had to recoup from that, and just came out, fought. And the next thing you know, he's like right there playing protagonist up at the front doing his thing. So I love seeing that kind of stuff. And he's only going to get faster now that Ian's putting some structured training in for him. So love it.
Strong.
Cool.
Good job, Chris.
Anyway, if you're interested in becoming a patron yourself, you can go to the website, thedialedpodcast.com, or go to dialedcycling.com and just look up the podcast on the website there. There's links to the Patreon for the Dialed Podcast, and you can pick one that works best for you, and it just helps us support this little show. Unfortunately, we don't have thousands of patrons, so we're not making millions of dollars off of this, but it does help pay for the cost, and we do appreciate that from every single one of you. So thank you. How about this?
Champ Alley in sports.
Champ here.
Champ is here. Champ is back in town, live and in action. Just in time to say nothing.
Oh, okay. we're gonna talk about Dorothy Mantooth, but we'll save that for another time.
No more Dorothy Mantooth.
She needs her own drop.
She does. We did have the Cyclocross World Championships last week. I talked about the women's race that happened on Saturday because we recorded very late last week. But the men went off on Sunday morning, and what? No surprise, Matthew Vanderpool won the Cyclocross World Championships. No Wout, no Pidcock there. But he won his sixth world championship, so congrats, Matthew. That was fantastic.
There were a lot of pundits who said that Wout would have fared really well in that race. It was a course that was not built for him, but suited his strengths quite well. So too bad he couldn't make it, but I still stand by my words from last week in your hot seat question that he made the right call. That's just my two cents.
He did a 200-kilometer ride, training ride that day, which was probably better for his Spring Classic campaign than a one-hour cyclocross race. But regardless, Vanderpool won, number six for him, and we'll see what happens. So
I haven't seen any bike racing on the TV since the demise of GCN Plus. I need to get that figured out.
The Algave Tour, the Portugal mm-hmm. Tour, is about to start, mm-hmm. I think, next week or something like that. There's been a few other races that have been happening, but there's really no big news. No big names have been in those races, so I don't know. There's not much more for Champ to say.
The UCI is stepping in, and they're going to be doing some standardization of the smart trainer racing stuff that's going on. So kind of stay tuned for that. There's some articles out there. I didn't really read into it in too much depth, but that's kind of interesting to see that they're going to step in and help like create some standardizations for the racing, which hopefully will transcend across all of the platforms, which can make online racing, if they adopt it from that level all the way down, it could make it a little bit more interesting. I mean, straight up, that's one of the reasons. I mean, you could still go do a race and have fun. But back when I used to ride bicycles, I didn't really do too many, if any, racing on Zwift, just because there's so many people that are just weight doping on there. And it's just not fun to know that you're giving it your all and some jackholes on there, like putting that he's 30 pounds lighter than he actually is and blowing your doors off. So to see some potential movement in that direction, and if they can kind of come up with something that can make that a little bit more of an even fair playing ground. If you want to do racing, you got to like have certain ways to like check off that you're actually this person and your trainer's standardized and fixed and all that fun stuff. That could be good.
Love it.
I'll stop rambling on.
No, that's good.
Cool. Anything else?
Mads Pedersen won a couple stages of the Tour de Provence. So his sprint legs are on point. So that's a good start for the season for him, but no, nothing else. Champ out. Move on.
Matt, did you want to talk anything about anything going on in the triathlon world? I know it's still pretty early. Is there anything there that you need to?
There's not much that I can really think of in regards to triathlon races that we've seen. The cyclocross world stuff, I watched some highlights from that. Definitely looked like MVP got away in the first lap, put like 40 seconds or so on the field, and then just kind of like stuck there for the rest of the race. It was hard to tell because I only really saw highlights, and the highlights were just like, and so-and-so had a bike issue, mechanical, so-and-so. And so I feel like it wasn't quite as much of as good of a race. Potentially, maybe the girls' race was better.
Yeah.
Did you guys mention girls' race, or Lance, did you get the chance to check that out?
We talked about that last week because...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It was 2 days.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, they said that Vanderpool, and like Matt, you know, I just got to watch the highlights, but they said that Vanderpool rode a near flawless race, that there was one time that he almost kind of did a little bit of a dab, but he didn't even do a full dab, but that was the only thing that he did wrong, which wasn't even really wrong. It was just kind of like a little quick check, and he didn't touch and just kept flying. So, man is something else on a bike. Yeah. So
he looks to be very good in the Spring Classics coming up. So those are going to be fun to watch with some big names.
He's got to change
big names.
His tune, though. I mean, he's got to get out of that short one-hour ride in the red zone.
How are we going to watch them?
I'm sorry. I'm falling all over the place.
Lance is a mess.
I'm passing out. Some of them are on Flow Sports. Some of the Spring Classics will be on Peacock, because they will cover some of those as well. But that will remain to be seen. They will be covered. What's the other one? Max? What? There's another one that is picking up some bike races.
It's HBO's new thing, Max. Whatever. They're going to be getting some races as well.
They're going to do some races.
But you got to buy Max, and then you got to buy some like subscription.
Yeah.
The real way to go for a seamless transition from your GCN Plus experience would be to go with the Eurosport Discovery package. But it's not easy. You can't even sign up for that with an American credit card.
Like a VPN or something like that to be able to watch it?
Well, VPN is yes, you can watch it through that. But just to sign up for the subscription, they will reject your credit card if it's a US-based card.
Oh,
why? That makes all the financial sense in the world. Why?
Yeah, it's a rights thing with the
I gotcha. That
countries they're allowed to...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Offer that coverage in. So
cool.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, HBO's Max will have the Giro mountain bike races, Saxo Bank Classic, Kern, Brussels Kern, but not all of them. The other ones I think are going to be on like Paris-Roubaix and Milan-San Remo. I think those will all be on Flow Sports.
And Flow Sports is going to do the Giro, but not the Tour.
Correct, because Peacock has the Tour.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is... easy peasy to watch, and it's cheap.
$6.
You can just get the app for 1 month.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You get to watch the whole. Like before, you had to pay like $50 if you wanted just to watch just the tour.
Is that with commercials though? Or?
Yeah, both of them. All of the platforms were with commercials, paid or not. And then since they switched over to Peacock, you still have the commercials and whatnot. But it's only $6 for the month, which is fantastic. Whereas
that's
before,
great.
You had to pay for the whole like cycling package, which was $50. I'm like, eh. Anyway, cool. All right. Well, let's move on to our topic for this week. I'm going to talk about the topic in the form of a question. How do I know that I can be competitive in a race? We're going to talk about that.
You're faster than everybody else.
That's right, baby. I went faster than everybody else, and I won. No, seriously, though, we've got Coach Ian here with us today, and we'll get into a few things that he just put out, and so that can definitely be some factors that we can talk about, but let's just kind of run through the paces on this thing and talk about, like, right, you're ready to go race, or maybe you've been doing a little bit of racing, or maybe you're thinking about jumping up a category, all these different questions that are probably running through your head, but the one that really it boils down to is, like, do I know that I can be competitive in this? Not necessarily are you going to win it. I mean, you always want to try and win it, but... how do you know if you can be competitive in a bike race? And it could be any bike race. It could be a time trial. It could be a criterium. It could be a road race, gravel race, mountain bike race, all of the different racing. There's some definite things that you can know and then you can utilize to prepare yourself. And it's going to give you a really good gauge on whether or not you're going to be competitive. So what are some points that you gents over there, you guys that ride bicycles, I want to know. Like if I ever decide to ride bicycles, right. Like how do I know that I can
just
be competitive?
Start riding bikes again?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, we should acknowledge that not everybody enters a race and feels like they need to be competitive. In a lot of cases, people are happy to finish the race, and that's an achievement in itself.
Yes.
If you're a triathlete, yes.
And the big thing with me, right, is don't get dropped.
Yes.
That's always the stressor with me. But some people find that just finishing the event is reward enough. But
You get your medal, then you go get your tattoo, and you wear the t-shirt, and you post it on Strava and Instagram.
You get your cool hat that you end up leaving on an airplane in Heathrow Airport.
Oh, no. Anyway, so, there is that, but I think probably the most basic thing is like, well, first and foremost, how much you've been riding your bike? Do you even have fitness?
What's your pace been like the last 8, 12, 16 weeks?
And you can even take that back because some people just go ride their bike and they're like, oh, I ride bikes. I can ride my bike 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a week. I'm going to go race my bike now. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're out there doing some sort of structured, formalized, like training program and following like, the advice of a coach or something like that. But, if you've just got some semblance of fitness, like that's going to get your foot in the door. So like, do you even have any base fitness? Do you have some miles logged into you? Are you starting to acclimate and feel comfortable riding on the bike and you got a good position and your butt's not going to, turn into a monkey butt and you're going to be good to go, to be able to race anywhere from like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, depending on what you're doing. So how much fitness do you have? That's the base question. Then the next question off of that is like, what have you done to shape that fitness? I mean, and you kind of alluded to that, like how much zone two have you put in? You know, what is your FTP numbers? What are those looking like? And little things like that. So talk about that.
You know, it's been interesting for me these, like, if I look at my last 3 years, 2 years ago, I had a very rough like winter where I was sick or injured and I raced terribly. I still lined up at a whole bunch of races, but I raced terribly. And then as the season goes up, went on and I raced, I just got a little bit fitter and a little bit better. And then that winter, I was so motivated to train that I trained pretty hard through the winter. So when the season started in 2023, I was pretty fit because I had done all this periodized training or interval work, and I had done all this stuff that kind of helped me start 2023 pretty well. I lined up for races. I did well in most of these races. For me, I got to know what I'm good at. I know that I'm better at when there's more bike handling involved. So mountain bike races, difficult gravel races, I tend to do a little bit better at. So I would focus more on those kinds of racing.
Sure.
Road racing, I love to do it, but I would show up to help teammates because I know that it's less likely that my power numbers and weight can match up with other people's power numbers and weight. It's not all about that. It's also about racecraft. But knowing that was good for me to be able to work for teammates. I'm totally happy to do that at road races, which is what I did that last year.
Speaking of road races, another good way to know, like, if you're going to be competitive or not, show up to your local bike rides. It doesn't have to be a race, but just like you were doing out there in Tucson, show up to some rides like that. Those rides are all over the country. Like, wherever you're at, and if people are out riding bikes, chances are there's a weekly ride or some sort of ride that goes off at some sort of regular interval that you can show up to. Go out there and see how well you can hang with everybody.
Right.
And then if you're not hanging with them, that's okay. But when you do catch back up to them, start asking the questions like, hey, do you guys race? Or like, tell me a little bit about yourself and get a gauge these people. Get an idea of like where they're at with their training, their fitness, what kind of training they're doing. Are they working with a coach? Or if you're racing, what category you're in. And then if you're showing up and you're relatively new, let's say you're a Cat 4 or Cat 5 or a novice or something like that, and you're getting your backside handed to you by a bunch of like 1s, 2s, and 3s. Well, that's good. Keep showing up and chances are you'll slowly start to catch up. You'll slowly start to hang with these guys if all of the parts and pieces come together and you're putting in the appropriate amounts of work. So that's a good way to kind of get a good litmus test as to whether or not you are going to be able to hang in a bike race.
Yeah.
So it's not just about the appropriate amount of work. It's important to have a good, solid foundation, good, solid aerobic base. But as you get closer to the event, you need to concentrate on the correct type of work. So your training becomes more specific.
Mm-hmm.
Specificity is important as you get closer and closer to the event. So you have to realize the race profile, what the terrain is going to be like, what the way the race is likely to unfold, and train specifically for those moves you think that are going to happen.
Yeah. So, I'll put a pin in that for just one quick second. I want to come back to that in just a second. Matt, before we move on to this next bit, is there some sort of recommendation that you would give to, say, triathletes who are like trying to figure out whether or not they're going to be competitive in a triathlon?
Well, you guys may have been joking, but I do feel like a lot of the triathlon races that are out there, especially like your local triathlons, they do tend to be a little bit more like to finish is to win style. Or at least that's been my experience. Lance can probably speak to this as well, but because Lance is actually a triathlete in disguise. But
shut your mouth.
I do think that
I am a very competitive person.
David.
Oh no. But I do think that you know, a lot of that is like, can you make the distance? And really important is the swim, is being safe on the swim, because a lot of the triathlon races are like, you're going out and you're swimming open water. And that's usually where I see people fail with triathlon races, is they get in there and you've got all of a sudden, you know, you've gone from like swimming in the pool and I can go from one side and I can hold on to the edge of the pool to the other side and I can hang on to the edge of the pool. And you're going to open water swimming and all of a sudden you got this wetsuit on, it's tight fitting, you got waves, it's crashing into your mouth, and you panic a little bit and you're not ready for the race. Like you're either asking for help to get out or you're panicking. I mean, like that's usually where I see people fail. It's not typically on the bike or the run as much. Most of the time people will be able to, if they can get through the swim, that's where I see most failures. But when they get through the swim, they're usually okay on the bike. And you can literally walk the run. Like, that's, there's no rules against that at all.
Right.
And so for people that are, you know, considering doing triathlon races, should they do it? Yeah, definitely go for it. I do suggest practicing open water swimming because there's that kind of like panic factor that you kind of need to flush out. So
sweet.
I guess I leave that to Lance though. Lance is more of a triathlon expert.
Just out of curiosity, Matt, if you were to say that there's 100 people that are going to go out and do your local triathlon, what percentage of those people are out there to win or be super competitive or find their way to a podium versus those that are just racing to finish? What would that percentage break down on average?
That's a great question. And again, it depends on the race because each race has its own kind of like dynamics. But the little local ones, I'd say 75% of the people that are out there are there to like have fun and finish. And we signed up as a group to do this thing. And we, you know, I really want to, you know, try this triathlon stuff versus like 25% of the people that are like, I do triathlons and I want to do better in my age group. And then a tiny, tiny, tiny percent of people that are like, I am going to try to do well overall. And I am very familiar with this stuff. And, you know, I'm really trying to get aero and blah, 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 blah. Time, you know, kind of those kind of commentaries. So.
Gotcha. And that obviously changes when you get up to like the Ironman level. You're going to have, like, you know, there's Ironmans all over the country and you can, or the world for that matter, that a lot of people show up to. And there's still going to be a fair amount of people that are just showing up to do the race just to say that they finished an Ironman because that's a massive accomplishment.
Sure.
But I would say that number probably flips in terms of like the percentages, probably like 75% of those people, especially for the bigger, more well-known ones, are going to be out there to try and do their absolute best, not necessarily a podium, but get their best PRs and whatnot. But and then you got the smaller percentage that's probably going for like, I just need to finish this because I want to say that I did fill in the blank triathlon Ironman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. Going back to what Ian was saying, he kind of alluded to like knowing the courses and knowing yourself and all that other fun stuff. Ian just put out a very cool little blog post for his coaching program, and it was very informative. First and foremost, Ian, where can people go to look at that?
You can find that on dialperformancecoaching.com.
That's a good place to go. And then I would also recommend and suggest that you follow Ian on Facebook is pretty much where you're at. Did you start an Instagram account yet?
No.
Not yet.
It's in the works.
We're working on that. And he's going to be on TikTok and he's going to be doing reels and doing all the fun things, the things that he's been just chomping at the bit for. But no, he actually has got some cool content that's coming out and should be fun. But going back to that, this was like kind of an interesting thing because when you talk about bike races and how you're going to like size up and do well, I know that for me personally that I've had a lot of success, but there's still plenty of bike races out there or when I used to ride bikes that I would just say, there's no way I will not be able to win that bike race because I am just too big of a guy. Like when I'm fit and I'm doing all my stuff right and popping off and, you know, trim and all that fun stuff, I'm usually somewhere in the ballpark of the low end, about 178 pounds to on average about 185. That's big for a bike racer.
Yeah.
If you want to go out and do any kind of sustained hill climbing, I can climb decently well, but when you start talking about like, you know, something that's going to be like a long 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 mile climb, or there's like, you know, 50 miles with, you know, 7,000 feet of climbing, I'm sorry, but I'm getting spit out the back because if there's a bunch of lightweights in there, it's just not happening. And so there's that there, but then you got to start looking at like physiology in terms of how you're built. So it's not necessarily just your size, whether or not you're an ectomorph, an endomorph, or a mesomorph, which are the different body sizes. But then you have to start looking at the muscle fiber composition within athletes and understand, all right, this is what I'm going to excel at. So I'm going to let Ian talk about that a little bit. We don't need to get too far into the weeds, but you can break it down. You can let the people know a little bit about.
I think you're right. You know, there's going to be races you're suited to and races that you're not, you know, if that race has got 6,000-7,000 feet of climbing and you're a sprinter, maybe you do have to temper your expectations slightly, but well, you will have to temper your expectations, but on the other hand, there's things you can do in terms of your preparedness, things you can do in terms of your race strategy and tactics that could give you the edge. You may not win that race, but you could end up doing better than you thought you would. So sure. Just because the race profile does not fit your body type, your muscle composition, your however much you weigh, however strong you are, then that's no reason not to feel like you can't compete whatsoever in that race.
But if I go out and buy a $15,000 bike that weighs 14 pounds, I'm going to win that race though, right? Yes, I mean, it's 2 pounds lighter than everybody else's bike.
Sure.
And I'm going to do that much better. Sorry.
Absolutely. Or you're looking down and not concentrating and the winning move goes up the road and you missed it.
Yeah, yeah. Keep your head in the game on a swivel. Yeah. Well, there is another little facet too that you might want to look into. If you can find out who's on that start list, like who's going to be in the race, who registered, and start to kind of run down the list, chances are if the person's racing bikes, there's a good chance that they're on Strava, and then you can start to do a little bit of Strava stalking.
Sure.
Find out like who knows this person or what Strava's saying about this person, and you can kind of get a sense of like, well, how many KOMs do they have? What kind of KOMs are those? What kind of speed are they putting out there? And if they are making it public, you can look at their power profiles, and you can start to kind of like weigh yourself against them as opposed to just leaving it all to chance. Like, I have no idea who's coming out here. I have no idea how I stack up against them. And I'm just going to show up and see how this unfolds versus like, right, let's go do a little bit of recon on this. So that like, once you're in the race, like there might be somebody on there that like, that person's probably going to beat me. But chances are, if you play your cards right, you can put yourself in the right position. If that person starts to go or tries to go, get on their wheel, get a free ride for as long as you possibly can. And then, even if you can't stay with them, that person might launch you far enough to where you can put yourself a little bit higher in the finish of that race.
Sure.
So
that's absolutely an essential part of your preparation for any race. For me, one of the first things I do is I look through the start list.
Absolutely.
See who's there. Some of those guys I recognize, some of them, quite a lot of them, and the races I've done, I've raced with those guys many times before. I know who's strong. But every now and again, you'll look at a start list and there'll be some guys coming in from out of town or people you don't know. And then sure, you know, there's, you have to do your research. Even, I've been out at PIR and I've had, what I do is I tape a little sticky note to my handlebar stem with the numbers to watch for. Race numbers.
So that you know.
So when that guy goes,
I need to make sure I'm on that wheel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. I certainly stalk every race start list I can when I'm doing it. You know, case in point, sometimes it doesn't help at all. I did this race in Phoenix a couple weeks ago and I didn't know a single soul. Yeah. I rolled up the start line and just looked around in the group of 30 people and were like, okay, I don't know who's fast, but I'm just going to start on the front row and when they blow the whistle, I'm just going to go full gas and see what happens. That race turned out decent for me, but I was also very fit at the time, so it ended up being okay. And sometimes you just have no clue and you know, okay, there's four guys here that I know are really hot or I know that they're going to be good. So if that guy makes a move, I'm going to try to stay on his wheel or I'm going to try to drop him at this point. You know, there's a lot of strategy going into knowing. Sometimes you know the names on the races, sometimes you don't, and you just kind of roll the dice and see what happens.
And to compound that problem, a lot of the races are different age categories racing together.
Yeah.
And so you don't know who your competitors are. You know, you might have some guy that you're following and you can't let him go and he's in a totally different race to you.
This happens in mountain bike races a lot. If the mountain bike race is a single track type race and there's a lot of single track in it, I might be coming up on another field. I might be leading the 50 field and coming up on 40-year-old or 30-year-old riders. And I say, hey, I'm 50. I'm not in your race. So when it's cool, when we're in a good spot, just let me pass.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're really pissed. What is this freaking old guy catching me already? Or it's, hey, no worries, go get it, you know, and they pull off quicker.
Yeah.
So,
and the other
real question here, real quick, Wentz, how many times have you rolled up and said, "Hey, I'm a 30 year old. How old are you?" Knowing that that guy's definitely a 50.
I've never done that.
Watch out. He's going to do it this year, guys.
But there has been times where I've been in races where I've asked guys their age that I'm like, I'm in a breakaway with, and I'm like, "Hey, how old are you?" And he didn't answer me.
What?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay.
It's going to be like that, huh?
I was like, okay, F that guy. I got to drop him as soon as I can because he's probably in my age group.
Yeah.
And he was. Yeah. And I dropped him.
Good job.
But then there's these big gravel races. Like when I raced Steamboat a couple of years ago, there's 1,200 people on the start line. Like how do you know who your competitors are?
Your job in that situation is just to get to close as the front of the possible as you possibly can and hold wheels as long as you can. Get a free ride for as long as you can, let the dust settle and then start doing your math to find out who's racing with you.
That's what happened at Unbound for me as well last year. Is we all started, 2,000 people in the 100-mile race at the same time. And we got to the nasty muddy section. And once we got past the muddy section, I ended up in a group of like four guys that we all looked like we're about the same age. So one of those guys is when I was just talking about, I asked him, "Hey, how old are you?" And I should have approached it differently. I should have been like, "Hey, let's keep rolling. We're doing great here. Let's try to pull away as far as I can. Hey, by the way, how old are you? Are we competing with each other?" And when he didn't answer, I realized he's probably in my age group. One of the other guys in the group was on a single speed. So I knew he was competing in the single speed. And he looked at me and I looked at him and I'm like, "We got to drop this guy." And he's like, I got you. Let's do this. Nice. So,
all right, let's get back to the point that I was making about the blog post that you wrote. And you did a great piece that discussed pretty much, the different muscle fiber types and how that plays out in terms of like your build. And the situation was, and he had some great anecdotes in there, was he was racing at Baker City Cycling Classic. And that's one of those races where I haven't done it yet, but I know if I showed up, I might do okay on the first day because I don't think it's quite as much climbing. The crit, I would probably do well if I wasn't falling apart, and I could do okay in the time trial as well. But that last day, and I think that's the one that you were talking about with respect to that final race, that's a different beast because that's a lot of climbing, and I'll let you take it from there.
Well, yeah, the anecdote that I mentioned told was basically it was myself and the only teammate with me at the time was Chris Hannell, who, if you know Chris, he's a fantastic athlete, extraordinarily fit. But we were talking later in the hotel, and he told me about his perceived effort over this one climb, and it was completely different to mine. He's like, "Yeah, I was at FTP all the way over that. It was a struggle." And I was absolutely maxed out, so VO2 max, gasping, panting.
You were way over FTP.
Way over that. And I thought, okay, so he's younger, fitter, but what else would cause one athlete to have a level of perceived exertion and another completely different, if given that they're training load, the training volume you've been doing, the specific training you've been doing, kind of match. What else is to blame for that? And it does come down to your individual physiology and
what your mama gave you.
Yeah. So I think the point of the article was saying that basically, no matter what your mama gave you, as far as your body makeup, as far as the percentage of less type 1 versus type 2 muscle fiber and their different characteristics, like no matter what that is, there are things you can do to mitigate that or at least compensate to that to a degree. And I went on to talk about the specific sort of training you can do to compensate for your
not shortcomings, but
your handicaps.
Exactly, your weak points. Yeah,
your weak points. So for example, guys that just say that, "Well, I can't sprint. There's no way I can sprint." And sure, right? You probably don't even have ambition to contest a 20-person bunch sprint on a flat race. But there are times where you're going to roll up to the line with three or four of your powerful climbing competitors there, and you'll need to out-sprint them. If you're going to...
Who put in the work to, elicit that.
So what do you do to train that part of your body that's not used to being trained, or that's traditionally a weaker point for you?
Lots and lots of drugs.
That's one answer.
And to your point too, I mean, there are like the two primary muscle fiber types, but there's kind of a blend in there as well. And for everybody, just remember, just because you think you're one thing doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to fall in one of two camps. And it's not a perfect container for each one of those. It's not like you're either container A or container B. There are those two containers, but there's a wide variety and spectrum in terms of like how your body is made. Your genetics are going to be what they are. And, you know, case in point here would be, like a Wout van Aert or a Matthew Vanderpool. Those guys can put out huge watts in a sprint. Those guys can do huge damage to you in a cyclocross race that's an hour long. But those guys can also destroy you on a one-day classic race because they have the ability to hold these numbers and they're bigger guys.
Yeah.
So they have that blend of they're not a climber. They're more of like a rollier, and they've got that ability to have that explosive pop, but they also have that endurance. So they've got like a really nice balance of those muscle fiber types. They can utilize that to their advantage. And that's why you see them in certain races doing certain things, because that's their specialty, versus like a Tadej Pogacar, who's like, he can still sprint. He's not a good example, but a Vingegaard, like that's a good example right there. Like he's got some pop in there. He's training it like Ian's talking about, but that guy's just a pure climber, and he's just got that ability to be lightweight, because that's his muscle, his body type, his ectomorph kind of build. And he is able to hold a really high threshold, not necessarily for sprinting, but his watts that he can hold relative to his body weight enable him to climb like nobody's business.
Right.
And you know, Vanderpool and Van Aert, those guys can't keep up with him on those long climbs. He's just too dang strong.
Yeah.
So,
they're at a completely different level, obviously.
And sure.
As an amateur cyclist, you don't have the luxury of choosing, I'm only going to do races that I know are going to finish in a bunch sprint, or I'm only going to do races with a lot of elevation gain.
You never know.
You never know, right? So your thing is to try and do your best, even at the races that you're physiologically apparently not suited to.
Sure.
So.
This reminds me of a race that Ian and I did last year. We did this Ashes to Glory gravel race, which was our state championship gravel race. And I thought I had been racing pretty well, so I thought I gave myself a pretty good chance. And we hit the first climb on the day, and 40 people rode away from me. I just could not hang with the climbers. And at that moment, I thought, okay, this is literally like 10 miles into the race of a 60-mile race. I don't know how long it was, 60 or 70 miles.
Yes.
Something like 60 miles. But everybody rides away from me, and I thought, okay, now what am I going to do? Well, okay, I know I'm ahead of Ian. I'm going to wait till Ian catches me, and I'm just going to do everything I can for him, because the 8 guys who are faster than me already went up the road. I'm not going to catch them. I didn't just completely sit up. I bombed the descent. I worked really hard on another climb. But Ian did eventually catch me, and I was able to help him at the end. We thought we were racing for the win. We did not. There was somebody else way up the road.
Whoopsie.
But that's what happens in these types of races. But it's kind of similar to that, where you need to be able to change things on the fly. So...
Yep. So to go back, I mean, not every race is going to be like the race that Ian's talking about in his blog post. It's not going to be a super hilly. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the road racing for amateurs is going to be kind of like a mixed bag. I mean, usually, like, at least where we're at, like the early season races are going to be a lot flatter, just because people are still trying to work into their fitness and they're still trying to get to their ideal weight, and they don't want it to be too hard and have people not come out and just not have that sense of like, all right, I'm not even going to be competitive or going to be able to hold on. And as the season goes on, it gets to be a little bit more difficult. But at least, again, where we're at, a lot of the races are going to be kind of like built for like a rollier kind of a person. Like you might have some that have a little bit more elevation gain in them, like a Silverton, which is a race that we did here locally that needs to be back on the map, on the schedule. Yeah. Or Kings Valley had a little bit of climbing in it as well. Or Cherry Pie had some climbing in it. Those were really good, like all around road races. you aren't necessarily going to win it if you're a big sprinter. You're not necessarily going to win it if you're a climber, and you're not necessarily going to win it if you're a roller air. I mean, there's a lot of like chess match stuff that goes into that. So like, you know, your team, that's going to be another thing that's going to determine whether or not you're going to be competitive in some of these races. If you're going to show up, you know, as an independent, you better be like channeling your best inner Peter Sagan, you know, being able to freelance and being able to understand like the dynamics and watching when things are getting away and the brakes are going so that you can surf wheels and really just kind of leech to somebody's back tire and like tire suck or wheel suck for as long as you possibly can. So there's that. There's just so many facets that go into those races that really make it a lot of fun. Another thing that a lot of people screw up on, especially when they're first getting into bike racing, is not understanding how to fuel and how to hydrate for these races. So there's a lot to be said there too. Just because you can throw down on Strava and have some great KOMs and you know you're doing a good job at some of these local group rides that are an hour, hour and a half long, as soon as these races get to be in that 60, 70, 80 mile range, like you might be able to sit in and suck wheels and all that stuff, but if you're not nailing your nutrition and your hydration, you're going to be screwed.
Yep.
Well, that's comes down to what I was saying earlier, is that your preparation is not just physical. It's getting your fueling strategy right. It's getting getting an idea of who your competition is. It's getting your tactics on the day right. All of those things are important. But going back to getting ready physically and talking about getting your training specific to those events, right? I mean, that's important. So you lay down a good base. You try to build up a good aerobic fitness, push up your threshold power outage and so on. But as the race approaches, you want to be training for that race. So let's go back and take another example that we both did last year, and that was the Banana Belt Road Race. Just as you said, you know, it's one of those races with a kind of a intermediate terrain. It wasn't flat. It wasn't super hilly.
It just rolls up and down. Yeah.
It did have this one climb that was like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, probably at 6-7%, maybe not as steep as that. And that, to me, when I looked at the course, that was going to be the key. Like, don't get dropped over the one climb we do every lap, right?
Yep.
And that was about a two-minute climb. So what do you do in preparation for that? So in the weeks before that, probably 4 or 5 weeks out, I started doing 2 times a week VO2 max intervals, 3 to 4 minutes. So I don't know, you know, at my level of fitness, maybe I'm not making a big dent in my actual VO2 max, but what it did was this. So I get to that climb, everybody's doing 400 watts, and I'm like, you know what, I can do this for 4 minutes. I do it, I've done it in my interval. So I knew in my head that I can hang on this climb, and that gives you that mental confidence.
Sure.
To say, yeah, I'm not going to get dropped here. I've done this so many times, right?
And that's a fantastic point. Like having a power meter makes a huge difference in knowing what you're capable of doing. Like if you're just going based off of rate of perceived exertion or your heart rate, that's going to help. It's better than nothing, but nothing's going to beat having that power meter if you're going to go out and do the training. So like when I used to ride bikes, knew like how long I could hold X amount of watts for in so many different scenarios. Like if I had to go for a mile, I knew how many watts I could hold. If I had to climb a certain gradient, I knew how many watts I could hold for that duration of time. If I was going to be in a sprint or if I was going to have to go do that climb, like I know that like that climb that Ian was talking about, he's talking about he's doing 400 watts, but he's also like 30 pounds lighter than me. And I was probably doing significantly more, but I also knew that in that time period, all right, that's fine. As long as like, let's say I was holding like 520 watts for that 2 minutes, which is fine. I can do that. That's in my wheelhouse. That's fine. But if those guys started popping off and maybe 4 or 5 of these lighter guys decided that they're going to go at a higher, whatever their watts are, they're going to separate and I have to, you know, go over that threshold, that's going to be a problem for me because there's going to be a gap there. There's going to be separation. But if it was the last lap, that could be problem time. But I also knew that, all right, know the course. I knew that after that climb that it flattened out, there was some downhill and I knew that I could sit in and suck some wheels and I could like recover a little bit. And I knew roughly how many matches I had to burn. that scenario never happened, but I knew that if that happened, that, all right, this is what I'm going to have to do to get back on. So you've got all of the different scenarios and like all of the different possibilities that could potentially happen during the course of that race. And as one starts to play out, you start to do the, if this, then that kind of scenario.
Right.
And you know how to kind of put yourself back in there. And that's a little bit of racecraft. Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to be able to know that stuff.
And also, yeah, a big advantage from doing structured intervals with a power meter. You know exactly what you're capable of for how long.
Yes.
And so another example of being specific to your training is this: we have this time trial coming up in another 4 or 5 weeks, I think. And it's totally different, right? It's a flat course. It's going to be about around about 30 minute effort. And so having a good, strong FTP and being able to work at that percentage of your max capacity, that's what it's all going to be about in that case. Mm-hmm. So right about now, that's where you need to be training at to do well in that event, if that's what you...
Your 30-minute power, not your 2-minute power.
Exactly.
Like for banana right. belt. Yes.
Which is kind of stating the obvious, but a lot of people miss that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good stuff. This makes me wish that I used to, or still rode bikes. The stuff is that's so much fun being in a race. And that's the beautiful part about a race is like, we've all done a ton of races. No race is ever the same. Nope. I mean, they'll be close-ish, you know, but everyone unfolds a little bit differently. And the more times you go out and race your bike, the more experiences you get and the more data that you get to like know about yourself and other racers and courses. And then you get to just kind of refine that over the course of time. And if you're doing it right and you're continuing on a training program and you continue to ride bikes, you're going to get better. You're going to get faster and you're going to get better results. It may not land you on the podium and you may never land on a podium, but you're going to get better results if you keep going out there and doing your thing, which is fantastic. You were going to say something?
Nope.
I've got a couple other things that I want to add to this, and we're getting a little bit long on the topic, but real quick, we talked about the nutrition, figure that out. If you're not sure how the nutrition part works, there's two things that you can do, and that's show up to the group rides, the local rides, and talk to some of the guys out there like, hey, what are you doing?
Sure.
What are you taking in? Which products do you use? Which ones do you recommend that I save from? You can start to like, you know, just get a sample of all of your peers. But the best thing that you can do is you can go to Dowd Performance Coaching and contact Ian Gibson. This is like plug after plug for you, my friend. But being able to talk to a coach that's going to give you their undivided attention and tell you how it is and help walk you down that path and give you the information that you need, that makes a huge difference. And if you're wanting to get better results, you can keep signing up and going out to these races and you can keep trying to figure this all out. But if you want better results faster, it's worth spending a few extra bucks because time is money. You know, if you're going to go out and do 20 races and you're going to just keep getting the same result over and over again, doing the same thing over and over again, and you want to get better, well, you could have taken that same amount of money and invested that in a coach, maybe done fewer races, done more appropriate training, come back and done the races and got much better results. So
yes.
That's just something to consider.
And don't forget, you're not just in... It's not just a money thing. You're investing your time into this. And so many of us don't have a lot of time to play with, right?
Sure.
There's work, there's family, there's all kinds of other obligations.
Yeah.
So why waste your time doing ineffective training?
Yeah. And not for nothing. And I don't want you to take this wrong way, but you don't always need to have a Coach Gibson, Coach Ian in your life for the rest of your life. It's good to touch base with him from time to time. But if, say, you worked with Ian for 3, 4, 5, 6 months a year and did that for like 3 or 4 years or 2 or 3 years. And then you really had a good sense of where you're at. And then you've got a good idea of your training program. You can taper off that and do your own thing. And then once you start to get into that plateau again, or to get stale, or you get old, or you get broken or something along those lines, and you need to go have like a refresher, then it's good to have them there at your disposal to like maybe work with for a month or two or three.
Yes.
That's a good way to approach that.
I'm glad I came here today. Business plugs.
On the other side of that, there are like pro athletes who are self-coached that will go through phases where they will go back to a coach for a season or two because what they're doing, what they're trying to do themselves doesn't quite work. Mm-hmm. So that can also be very helpful as well.
Gotcha.
Guys, I'm dropping.
Oh.
Good to chat with you guys.
We hate you, Matt.
Have fun playing with your goggles, buddy.
All right, later, guys.
I'll talk to you later.
See you, bud.
He got tired of us talking about bike racing.
I know.
Want to talk more triathlon and running stuff. But we should have asked him what his latest, greatest video is. Oh, maybe we'll have to look that up on the YouTube.
I think there's something about these Apple Pro Vision.
That are coming out. Yeah. The last component, which This one is kind of subjective, and it's not like an absolute thing. It's kind of tough, and it's something that you got to have to know about yourself, but it's the psychological component. Like, if you find that you typically break easy, or you get a low threshold of like pain or the ability to suffer, or you're just not like, you know, in it to win it, or you're just not like ready to like put it all out there. Most people that sign up for a bike race and line up to go do that thing are going to have a pretty good mental fortitude, and they're going to have the ability to suffer. But understand yourself and know your psychological components, and understand whether or not you're able to be in that hurt locker for long periods of time. And once you get a good baseline of that, work on it. Just keep telling yourself just a few more seconds, or come up with like, all right, this hurts worse than anything I've ever done before. I feel like I'm going to puke, but my legs are still working. Instead of giving up right now, pick something out that's, you know, 100 meters up the road and get to that point.
No, and then, just go ahead and puke and then just keep going.
Yeah, you could do that too. It always feels better after you puke. So understand yourself from a psychological component, how you can build up some toughness there. And that's one of those things that I love, and I've got different mental steps that I take that I use to challenge myself. And I know that other people are hurting just as bad, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to hurt just as much as they are, or I'll turn that on its head. And it's like, all right, everybody hurts here really bad right now. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make them hurt even worse, even though I know it's going to hurt me. That might just be enough to break them.
Right.
And I'm going to push through that, and I'm going to hate myself after it's done, and Lance is going to puke all over himself because, you know, that's how he does his thing. But there's a component there, and I always will visualize like the finish line. I will always visualize, and this is the thing that I've always used, is that my kids are at that finish line and they're cheering me on and they want to see me do well. And that's, even though they're not there, I still like, all right, pretend that they're there.
Yeah.
Pretend that that's who you want to work for. That's who you want to make, you know, make you happy, or, you know, kind of do it for them.
I feel like there should be a name for those who are prone to puking. There must be some kind of term for that.
Like Heplering?
Heplering. That's not good. How did I get to this place?
Oh, good times. Do you guys have anything that you want to say about the psychological component? Because I see both of you, and I see both of you having the capacity to really hurt quite a bit.
I don't have much more to add to that, but I will say that in all the studies I've done, you know, to get into the coaching thing, the psychological aspect of it is always emphasized as important, arguably, as the physical side. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge body of study on the psychological importance in sporting events.
Sure.
So, yeah.
I know for me, I know that we've all heard this before. It never gets easier. Even the fitter you get, it never gets easier. It still hurts just as much.
Yep.
You just go faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's certain things that I know about myself. Like I know that I fall apart after 6 hours, and I don't like that I know that about myself, and it plagues me because guarantee you there's going to be times where I can still go pretty hard after 6 hours if I'm fueling right. But every time I sign up for a race that I know is going to be longer than 6 hours, I'm like, what the hell?
What did you do? What was it, last week or the week before you signed up for a little race that's out there in the middle of nowhere that you said you weren't going to do again?
Stupid Unbound.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going back to freaking Unbound.
How many hours is that going to take you?
It's a 100-mile race. So realistically, I should be able to finish it in less than 6 hours.
Yeah, what's going to happen if it's muddy or windy or rainy?
Last year, I finished, it took me 6.5 hours. Uh-huh. And the last hour and a half absolutely sucked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why I've been doing more hours this year in my base training than I did the previous year, because I know that freaking race is coming. But I'm torn too. It's the same type of thing. Most of the races that I'm doing are 2-hour races. You know, they're in the 1.5 hour to like 4 hour range. That's it. All these gravel races, the mountain bike races I do are all like 1.5 to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So I play this game where do I want to be the race car or the diesel? And I've always called myself the race car, not the diesel.
Just real quick for the people that are listening to this that have maybe never done a bike race, but have gone out and ridden for that period of time, and maybe that period of time kind of sucked. There's a weird psychological component to these races. A 2-hour race feels like it's 20 minutes long, 30 yes. minutes long. I mean, granted, sometimes it's sucking in. I might feel like it's a little bit longer than that, but I don't know what it is. There's like a full-on time vortex in your brain that just like you don't realize that it's that far or that long of a time period or a distance. It just does not feel like that. And that's something special about racing bikes too that I absolutely love, that you can go out there and do crazy things for these, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours, and it just didn't feel like it was that long. And the longest thing I've ever done was Seattle to Portland. Granted, it wasn't a bike race, but they gave us timing chips, and you put a timing chip on me, and it turns into a race. Yeah. So you go hard. And that the fastest time I had in that was 9.5 hours.
Yeah.
For 206 miles, and we averaged 22.5 miles an hour. Granted, there was a small group of us working together, but even that did not feel like 9.5 hours of sitting on the bike. Granted, you're smoked at the end of that because you're going pretty hard, you're working hard. But when you go back and if there was no time and no reference to sun up and sun down, all that stuff, and you ask me like, how long was that race or that ride that you just did? I don't know, 4.5, 5, maybe 6 hours, but it was 9.5. You just don't have the sense that it's that long. So don't feel like, oh my God, I can't go suffer and feel like I'm going to puke and run in the red and do all these crazy things and have to understand nutrition and race text and all these other funny things, because that's just way too long of a period of time. No, once you get in there and you're in the moment, all of the nerves go away. You get stuck in there and you're playing this fun little video game, and it just does not feel like it's that long unless you're not prepared or you get spit out in the back and you're riding by yourself. So
yeah, I agree. Sometimes the hardest part of a race is just getting yourself to the start line.
Yep.
You know, I still get anxiety now about the effort that's to come and how well I'm going to perform and stuff. But once you start rolling, it does. It seems the time seems to pass.
Yeah.
Well, you're so fully engaged in what you're doing. You're not thinking about other stuff other than where's this wheel going? Where's this turn coming? You have to be engaged to prevent yourself from crashing and to make sure that you're noticing the moves that you need to notice or doing the things you're supposed to be doing in a race. So everything else fades away when you're like going full gas in a race.
Absolutely. So. Cool. I don't have anything else to lend to this. This was a fun topic.
It was fun.
Do you gents have anything else that we potentially missed? Anything?
I'm sure there's lots. Yeah. I think you're right.
What's your first race coming up? Ian.
I think it's going to be Pendleton.
Michael Myers Memorial Time Trial.
Well, the first race that I'm going to participate in is probably Pendleton.
You're going to race the time trial, aren't you?
I don't know. I didn't have time to last year.
I think we've got, this will be year three.
Anyway, shall we do this shameless plug now?
Hold on to one last thing, and we'll do it then.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think that's it. If we did miss something, or if there's something that you want us to talk about, or something that didn't really ring true with you, hit us up. Make a comment. Go over to jump on the Facebook or Instagram and post something there and ask us a question, and we'll put that out there. I do have a new thing, and I have to remember to put this out there and share it. But there's a thing where I have a link where people can call, and not we'll call, but they log into this link. It's a website. Whatever. They can ask us questions. They can tell us that Lance sucks. They can do all of the things, and then they hit send, and it notifies us, and then we get the audio file, and we can share that on the podcast here, talk about it so we can answer questions. We can, let you kind of say a piece or do some little things. So that's a new feature that I want to be rolling out here very soon. So stay tuned, and we'll definitely put that out there for people to be able to do that.
Please send your Lance hate voicemails directly to us. That would be fantastic.
Fantastic fuel for Lance.
Fuel my hate fire.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for that. Let's jump into one last thing. And Lance, do you want to go first, or Ian, do you want to go? Or
I'll go first.
Go for it.
First of all, Matt LeGrand, 2 days ago, put out a video. The key difference between the Garmin Forerunner 265 and 965.
Hold on.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys are looking good, and particularly good looking good today. I mean, I don't know. You guys seem to look good every week.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
So we did put out a video a couple days ago about some watches. Go watch what those differences are. He did something the week before about the Apple Vision Pro, the virtual goggles.
So he's got them now, and that's how he talked to us today. We already talked about that. That's pretty cool.
For me, 1 week from tomorrow, our team training camp starts. So that is 8 days away. We're going to San Diego County. There's roughly 20... teammates that are coming down to join us, and we're going to beat the hell out of each other.
Ice cream sandwich.
You.
Damn it, Jake.
Yeah, it's a
ice cream sandwich
of a situation.
It's a yeah, I agree with that. Sorry to bring up sensitive subjects.
Ice cream sandwich.
That's it. Ian, go.
Okay. We have our third annual Dial cycling event coming up on March the 9th. That's a Saturday. It's the Michael Myers Memorial Time Trial. It's going to be held out at Vancouver Lake.
Yes, sir.
And it's going to be, it's shaping up to be an awesome event. We are, I think we have 30 or 40 registrations so far.
That's not bad considering we just opened it not too long ago. Yeah. And we really haven't even like made the big push yet. So
yep.
Go sign up.
Go sign up. If you're on Dial Cycling Team, please sign up, or even better, please volunteer to help us out.
Go do it.
Go do it. It's your obligation. It's the one event of the year that we're trying to get all hands on board. There is a link on our Slack channel to a Sign Up Genius page, and the various positions are listed there. Please add your name to that. That'd be great.
We'll share that to the greater community as well, because there's a lot of people that do listen to the podcast, but they just don't race bikes, and they like to help out, though. Yeah. So we will be putting that out for anybody that wants to register. You don't have to be on the Dial Cycling Team or a bike racer per se, but if you want to help out, there's a lot of different ways that you can connect and help with us on that. So
it's going to be a great event this year. We've got categories for everybody. We've separated out the Eddy class, so you can come along, and if you don't have all the aero components, if you don't have a time trial bike, you can race in the afternoon. We've got expanded categories for all age groups then. It's just going to be an awesome day.
Yeah, we've got the open category, and then we've got the 40-plus category, and then we've got the 55-plus category for both male and men and women. So that is that's a cool feature. I don't recall ever seeing an Eddy category for 55-plus, so well played, Ian. Well played. Yes. That's smart. Are you going to do
it? It's got my name on it.
If you do race on your TT bike, will you consider coming back and doing a second race in the Eddy?
Yeah, I mean, if I have time. Last year, it was, I don't know, race promoting is an intensive activity. There was a lot going on last year, and I had every intention of racing. It just didn't happen. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, hopefully if we get enough volunteers and so on, it's going to be very smooth operating, and I'll get a chance to pin a number on.
Sure. We'll see. Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but there may or may not be an additional category that gets added to the race, and it'll be at the very end of the day. But gosh, you're going to have to pay attention. You're going to have to follow us on social media. Go follow us on Dial Cycling Team on the Stravas and the Facebooks. And then you can follow the podcast. Obviously the Dial podcast are at the same places, but there might be a category on there for classic bikes, and you have to be over the age of 50, and your bike has to be at least 40 years old. And then if you sign up for this category, you're not allowed to wear any aero gear, and you're not allowed to go over 12 miles an hour too. So it's going to be the slowest time. I might be racing in that category, boys.
Is it the broken hip category?
Yeah. And you have to ride on a Bianchi too. So that might be a sweet category. I'm wondering, that's going to be pretty popular. There'll be a lot of people in that.
I love it. So.
Awesome. I really don't have a lot of stuff to share this week because I was going to talk about the Michael Myers Memorial Time Trial, but Ian hit us up on that. So I'm going to say it one more time. Go check out Ian on the old interwebs. Go follow him on Facebook. It's the Dial Performance Coach page on there, and you can read more about that and join him and get the cool stuff that he's putting out. You can poke and prod him and tell him that you want more videos and to get an Instagram account, and you want to see him on their the old TikToks doing the Dial Performance Coach dances to the latest and greatest pop music trends out there. And you know,
I'll be roll over that.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And you can also go to the Dial Cycling website, and there's a link to Ian on there as well if you forget the whole Dial Performance Coaching thing. So, but Ian, thank you for coming in to join us today.
You're welcome.
That was a lot of fun, and Ian will be joining us more often. He's got great perspective, and you know, since Evan's always busy doing Evan-y things and joins us periodically, you know, when he's got the extra time.
The phrase of the day is "Shut up, Evan."
Lance was mean to Evan, so he just doesn't come on very often.
I scared him away. Sorry, Evan.
Yeah. Anyway, we got a lot of stuff coming down the pipeline. I've got so many things going on, and I'm hoping to feel better one of these days and to learn how to ride a bike again.
Evan, if you're listening to this, you are not allowed to race the men's 4-5 category at Mike Myers.
Mandatory upgrade?
Mandatory. Yeah.
That was funny seeing him out there. Anyway, all right, we've rambled on long enough. That's it. Let's call this one done. We will be back next week with another one of these. And until then, bye for now.
This has been Talk. Thank you for listening.